All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rinkwide Vancouver. Three goals in the first two periods and three goals in the final 3 minutes. You add it all up, it's a 4-2 Vancouver Canucks victory over the Calgary Flames at Rogers Arena. This is Rinkwide Vancouver, and we're coming to you from our studio in the Sheraton Wall Center Hotel in the heart of downtown Vancouver. If you're thinking about wedding space, the Wall Center can meet your every need, from small family gatherings to big, bold weddings and receptions. Consider the Wall Center if you're looking for wedding and reception space. Email them, sales@wallcenter.com. Jeff Patterson joined on this episode by David Quadrelli of Canucks Army and Canucks Conversation. And Dave, I said right there off the top, if you didn't see the game, you heard 4-2 finally, you probably thought a fair bit going on, but let's be honest, this was a 2-1 hockey game that the Canucks were able to finally break open with a power play goal that gave them a little bit of breathing room, and then they exchanged late goals to make it a 4-2 final, but a whole lot closer than it probably ought to have been.
Jeff, blink and you miss it. Like, blink and you miss it. It felt like there was no action in this game. And yes, this game was a little bit closer than you would have liked to see. And look, there's going to be a lot of things that we talk about tonight, but I just, right off the top, you said it there, the power play goal icing this game. The Canucks had a chance to ice the game with a power play opportunity a little bit earlier, and then the Flames hit a post. How different does this game look if it's 2-2? Canucks maybe don't even get that power play opportunity, but then they get another chance and they make quick work of it. I thought that was very important, that they just put the hammer down and iced this thing when they should have. Like, they should beat the Calgary Flames. That's what we're really, you know, they should beat the Calgary Flames. And this could have been different if that puck didn't hit the post late in the third there, but they had another chance on the power play and they iced it. They finished this game off, and that's what they should have done.
Elias Lindholm seals the deal into an empty net. The Flames did score in the final minute. Again, just to make it a little bit closer, it was 4-1 at one point there for the Canucks. So Lindholm gets the empty netter against his former team, Andre Kuzmenko. Played 16 minutes and 7 seconds, one shot on goal, 3 attempts. Worked hard. Even Rick Tocchet, I think, would have to admit that Andre Kuzmenko was battling in this hockey game, getting an opportunity perhaps that he wasn't getting on a nightly basis here in Vancouver. But this is a Canucks post-game show, so we don't have to worry too much about former Vancouver Canucks. Nils Höglander is a Canuck now and should be for the foreseeable future based on what he has brought to this mix all season long. He gets the party started, and this really has been a theme on this homestand, Dave. The way the Canucks have jumped on opponents in 5 of the 6 games, they have opened the scoring in the first 5 minutes. This time it took 48 seconds, a beautiful tic-tac-toe play. Garland with the zone entry, Pettersson with a sublime pass, and Höglander there at the back door. Number 21 for number 21, and he was getting his night started, but a really pretty goal and another terrific start for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Elias Pettersson, right, is you want your star players to be able to play with anybody, but you really see it, and you've seen it lately in these games where you see that Nils Höglander and Connor Garland are just thinking on a similar wavelength to Elias Pettersson, right? Like that tic-tac-toe goal. That doesn't happen if Garland and Höglander aren't thinking at the same rate, or a similar rate, I should say, to Elias Pettersson. And look, like, yeah, you said it. It was a tic-tac-toe goal that was just absolutely beautiful. And Jacob Markstrom was the one that couldn't catch up to it, right? Like, Jacob Markstrom couldn't keep up, but Connor Garland, Elias Pettersson, and Nils Höglander could keep up. And it was masterful right off the start. And then that second one, just beautiful, beautiful goal from Nils Höglander going to the backhand. And yeah, those two goals from Nils Höglander, I thought, really exemplified why he's been such a good fit on Elias Pettersson's wing, and really Connor Garland as well. Like, Connor Garland picks up an assist on both of those goals. This line continues to hum. It was undoubtedly the Canucks' best line tonight, and it just felt like the ice was tilted all night long when that trio was on the ice.
Yeah, and Garland with two secondary assists, but really they weren't. I mean, they were both instrumental. Again, the zone entry, and then the nice pass to Pettersson to deliver the puck for Höglander on the first one. And then Garland springs Pettersson, and, you know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I think some people might have looked at the play Elias Pettersson made there and thought, oh, just no confidence. You know, he had a chance to pull away from a defender and have a breakaway himself, but totally unselfish on his part. He sees Höglander there with more speed than he has, sends Höglander in all alone, and boy, he made no mistake. Put him at the top of the list if the Canucks are involved in another shootout. Hadn't happened often this year. They've only been involved in two shootouts, both on the road. So Canuck fans, I don't know if people want to see shootouts, but the Canucks have done a nice job of winning in regulation for the most part, and games that have gone to overtime have generally ended in OT. But again, Rick Tocchet, make a note there that if you need a shootout shooter, Nils Höglander showing some incredible finish for his second of the night, 22nd of the season. And I thought that was going to be the one that broke the Calgary Flames. It makes it 2-0 midway through the second period. Flames didn't have a whole lot going. They don't have a whole lot to play for. And of course, since the Canucks last saw them, they traded Lindholm here to Vancouver, but they also traded Chris Tanev away, traded Noah Hanifin away. They had four different defensemen in their lineup tonight from the last time they faced the Vancouver Canucks in early December. So you don't see that kind of in-season turnover on your blue line that often, but that's where the Calgary Flames are. So yes, the Vancouver Canucks, the better team. Whether you look at them in the standings, you just look at their lineups. And at 2-0, I thought, okay, they can exhale here, a chance perhaps to, you know, take full control of this hockey game. The game meant so much more to the Canucks than it did to the Flames. But where we talk about early starts and early goals for the Vancouver Canucks being a central theme of this homestand, so too is late second period goals against. How many times have we seen that now? A bunch. And again, the Calgary Flames sort of against the run of play. And it was Rasmus Anderson off the rush. Snapshot, I don't know if Casey DeSmith, you'd like a save, I suppose, but it's hard to knock the performance. And we'll talk more about the Canucks goaltender as we do here on each and every episode. But a goal that gave the Flames a little bit of life, and they hung around. And they hung around too long, quite frankly, in my opinion. The Canucks weren't able to put them away. I thought Calgary carried the play for a good chunk of the third period. And so, yes, when the Canucks got the second of the two power plays, finally they were able to put the dagger in, and JT Miller with the one-timer off that left side, set up neatly by Brock Besser. 34 now for JT Miller, 90 points with 11 games to go for the Canucks scoring leader, who got to 99 2 years ago. He's at 90 now with 11 to go. You have to think he's getting to 100. And then some. It was a night for big round numbers. Quinn Hughes gets his 80th point. Elias Pettersson, his 50th assist. And then he added to that, so he finishes the night with 51. But what did you make? Because Miller takes the tripping penalty on Kadri early in that third period. And I thought, like, uh-oh. You know, this is perhaps the door that's now open for the Calgary Flames. But the Canucks able to dodge that when their penalty killers go 2-for-2 on the night.
Their penalty killers were good, and Casey DeSmith was really good. Like, I thought Casey DeSmith came up big on those penalty kills as well that they had. For JT Miller, I was just, it was an up and down game. And the way I kind of described it in instant reaction was the Pettersson line was dominant all night, and the JT Miller line, I think maybe line is a little generous there, but JT Miller was there when the Canucks needed him to be. I didn't like the first 40 minutes. I really thought, and again, I know they pull within one in the second period there, but I thought in the first period, the Flames had a lot of chances that I thought Casey DeSmith was really, really good on. I thought he needed to be really sharp in the first period. And again, it's one of those things where you look at it and say, okay, there was a post late in the third, which we've already talked about, but how different does this game look if it's 1-1 heading into the second period, right? And, you know, maybe you don't get that early goal in the first 10 minutes of the second period from Nils Höglander because you're tied up. Like, it totally changes the complexion of the game. So I always look back and see those saves that Casey DeSmith made it in the first period, I think were ultimately what set the Canucks in the right direction.
You know, it's kind of funny. You mentioned the post late in the game, 7 minutes to go. Huberdeau, a bit of a breakdown there right after the Flames had killed off the first of the two Canuck power plays. And so thought maybe that was going to be a big momentum swing. But, you know, other than Huberdeau hitting the post there, like I look back through my notes and early in the hockey game, Miromanov in the slot after a rare Quinn Hughes giveaway, he had the puck and had lots of time to get it out of the zone and he couldn't. And Miromanov had a really good look and Casey DeSmith came up big there. Anderson hit a post late in the first period. Boy, it rang throughout Rogers Arena. You could hear it up in the press box. But really, it, you know, and then you look who scored their goals. Anderson off the rush and then Hanley at the end, two defensemen. So the Canucks did a nice job. Like the Flames don't score a lot of goals, but Kadri's having a decent season. Blake Coleman, obviously, is having a nice year when it comes to goal scoring. Sharon Govich, you thought maybe Kuzmenko would be motivated. Canucks did a pretty good job on the Flames' top forwards. It was that new-look defense that came through and provided the offense. But I'm with you. You know, there weren't a lot of shots on goal in the first period. The shots were 6-6. But there were chances at both ends. Brock Besser all alone in the slot after a dreadful turnover by the Calgary Flames. Tried to beat Markstrom high on the stick side. But that reminded me of rookie Brock Besser with those chances in the slot. And, you know, he didn't miss back then this time. And he hasn't missed a lot this season, obviously. But I'm sure he would have loved that one. You know, one of the other plays as well that I made note of, and actually at the moment it was a big play, Teddy Bluger. Like, we're not often talking about back checks on rink-wide, but laying out, and it was a wild sequence because at top speed, he gets, like, all puck, but he's able to chip it up over the net, so he's not, like, tapping it back and forcing DeSmith to make a save. But then so often you'll see a guy sliding like that at top speed, crash into his goaltender, but he was able to avoid the goal. Like, it was a win all around for Teddy Bluger. Some nice hustle there. But, you know, again, in a tight game, like, I think that shows those are the types of plays that, you know, can be difference makers. It's not always about the goals you score. Sometimes it's about the goals you prevent, and that would have been a really good scoring chance for the Flames. So a little bit of credit on the defensive side to Teddy B.
How about Elias Pettersson with the pad stack, Jeff?
Like that one, too.
Like that one.
That one written down, yeah.
Save. Yeah, the kick save and a beauty from Elias Pettersson. And, and yeah, you brought up the play by Teddy Bluger, and I want to kind of transition a little bit to the shot blocks. Like, this team's commitment to blocking shots for Casey DeSmith, and we heard Rick talk a couple weeks ago talking about how, you know, a little inside baseball there. He said, you know, when you like a goalie, you block more shots for him. And of course, we then had to ask Tocchet which goalies he liked the least in his career. And maybe we can go find the shot block numbers and we'll be able to figure it out ourselves. But this team's commitment to blocking shots, like, that's Elias Pettersson. That's a star player. And like, we know Elias Pettersson does what it takes to win, and he's got that in his game. But, you know, laying out lace first, like, his laces are up. And look, maybe it's a different conversation if he gets hurt. He doesn't. He blocks the shot and the puck doesn't even get near Casey DeSmith. And that's the kind of commitment that you're going to need in the playoffs. Like, that's ultimately what this team's going to need to do in the playoffs. And again, the power play, that's the thing I keep bringing up. That's the thing that when this team was struggling and they were on that little, after their 4-game win streak, they had those couple losses and everybody's microanalyzing their staples and everything. My thought was always they've shown they can stick to their staples and they can produce there. They can produce at 5-on-5. Oddly enough, what I was worried about was the power play, which had been at 15% since the start of February. They've turned that around since then. And that's the thing that I think matters the most for the playoffs is when you get so few power play opportunities, you better make sure you're ready to convert. And tonight, you know, it wasn't like a playoff game per se, but in the sense of you had a chance to shut the game down and ice the game on the power play and the kind of coming through there. I think that matters a lot in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, come on. Don't sell it short. So tight. It's almost like a playoff game. And look, JT Miller draws the penalty on Shillington and then is able to put the hammer down to make it a 3-1 hockey game with the man advantage. But you're right. If the Canucks had not scored there and the Flames had come back to tie, and I get hypothetical and it didn't happen this way, but the conversation around the power play in crunch time, and it wasn't that long ago, Tocchet was saying, I don't care about the power play percentage over the balance of the season I want to see the power play come through in crunch time in hockey games. And they had a chance against Colorado in the third period at 3-3, and they didn't score. And the Avs won that night. They had a chance at 2-1 against Washington last Saturday, and the power play didn't come through. And the first power play generated one shot. It was Pia Suter. It was a decent look in that bumper position, but a reminder that Pia Suter's not Bo Horvat. Pia Suter has had a few chances in the bumper, and you know, he just doesn't possess that killer instinct as a National Hockey League shooter. He has been a nice addition to the hockey club, plays roles for this group, but you know, that is an area that, and they've got to go forward with the guys that they've got, but boy, the more he scores, you wonder, like, couldn't Hoglander as a left-handed shot be that? Couldn't you put him in the bumper there and just see if maybe he could find the back of the net? But whatever, that's for another day, because they did get it right on that second power play. And I saw you banging the drum here at one point in the hockey game, because Flames fans wondered about a penalty shot for Jonathan Huberdeau on the Vasily Podkolzin slash. Although I also saw people saying, like, how's that even a penalty? Forget a penalty shot. He got a stick on stick there. But he did get a couple of whacks, and I wasn't surprised that there was a call on the play. But, like, JT Miller, the Shillington trip seemed to check just about every box imaginable. Miller's in behind. There's nobody between him and Markstrom. It negates a scoring chance. He doesn't, like, follow. Huberdeau continued and had a scoring opportunity at the very least on the sequence. JT Miller didn't, because he was dumped. I kind of thought there was going to be a penalty shot there, but you know what? All things considered, I mean, the Canucks score. With 4 minutes left on the clock, you know, if Miller stopped on a penalty shot, then it's still a 2-1 game and the Flames have some life. I actually think maybe that call benefited the Canucks, that, you know, they score great. Even if they don't score 2 minutes on the power play, they should be able to spend time in the Flames zone and run down the clock. So maybe you would like to have seen JT Miller get a penalty shot, but I think if you ask the Canucks, they probably were okay with the 2 minute penalty instead.
Another rep for your power play, a chance for your power play to ice it. And Jeff, I'm not going crazy, right? Like, everybody was gaslighting me in the replies. I'm not going crazy that we haven't seen a penalty shot called in a long time. Like, it feels like there's just less penalty shots around the NHL. I don't know if I can look up how many were called in past years and how many have been called this year. I got to get to the bottom of this, because, yeah, everybody in the replies was gaslighting me. Just, oh, well, here's the definition of the rule and why it wasn't called a penalty. I've seen penalty. I've watched hockey for some time now. Like, I can see what is going to be a penalty shot.
The Canucks haven't had a penalty shot this year.
Yeah.
They've had three against them. Sean Couturier, when he's in the Flyers lineup, in Philly back early, beat Thatcher Demko. Liam Foudy with Nashville was stopped by Thatcher Demko just before Christmas. And Jake Walman, who we'll forget, Jake Walman scoring on a penalty shot in overtime in Detroit against Casey DeSmith. So there have been three penalty shots against the Canucks, but the Canucks have not had a penalty shot. And as I mentioned earlier, they don't go to the shootouts very often. They've only been to two of those seven total shots. Interesting to note that the Canucks don't have a shootout goal. So maybe it's a good thing that games don't go to shootouts, but their shooters have yet to score in the one-on-one skills competition. Two shooters have beaten Canuck goaltenders 2-for-3 are opponents in penalty shots. So no, I think you're right. Like, by this point in the season, usually you've seen the Canucks get a couple of penalty shots somewhere along the line. That JT Miller penalty seemed like it would have been a case study to me. Like, I just don't think the Flames could have argued. I don't think anybody in the building would have blinked if the referee had pointed to center ice instead of giving them the trip.
I'm trying to watch the penalty. Like, because I was watching it in real time, and Shillington kind of just, like, you know, he kind of loses the body position, and he tripped him with his skates, but there was no intent. He just went down because JT Miller's so strong, right? Like, I'm looking at this play right now, and that's what I'm seeing, is just that Miller kind of shrugs him off, and then that's what you're left with, is just Shillington on the ice, and then his skates get Miller.
Hey, whatever it takes, Miller gets the call, and then Miller is the guy that scores 34th goal of the season, 16:42. And that turns out to be the game winner. It made it 3-1, and then they exchanged late goals, but the third Canuck goal in a 4-2 victory is the game winner. So Lindholm gets the empty netter, 14th goal of the season. It's been a while since he scored, and for the first time as a Canuck, it's just a solo goal, because his other two games, when he has scored, he has scored twice. You know what? I mean, there's a lot of buzz around him right now, and there's some concern, I think. Elliot Friedman, kind of cryptic report in the second intermission of the early game on Hockey Night in Canada. But the fact that he's talking about Elias Lindholm tells you that there's probably more to this story. Of course, a maintenance day on Friday. And even if you go back to Thursday against Montreal, like, this guy's a face-off whiz, and he won 3 of 13 draws against the Habs. And that kind of got my attention right then and there. Believed to be an upper body injury. I think it's probably somewhere under a glove. We'll just go with that. But whatever the case, maintenance day yesterday. He took the morning skate this morning, but I thought it was hilarious. He came out afterwards, met the media, had a hand in each pocket of his workout shorts. Like, he didn't want anybody to see, get a look at the arms, the hands, whatever. But he did do his media. I actually thought he played really well. Like, if this is an injured guy, I know there's been some concern, and he didn't play well because he scored an empty netter, but this was back to him being the guy that they wanted, probably a little fired up to play his former team, but he wins 8 of 11 faceoffs. Nice play on the empty netter and, you know, hit the center of the net from distance there. But again, I just thought this was a more inspired effort from Elias Lindholm. And the fact that it was against the Flames probably plays into that. He's going to see them one more time. And he talked this morning that it'll be a bigger deal for him when he goes back to Calgary, but that's not going to happen this year. And in fact, he may not go back to Calgary as a member of the Vancouver Canucks because we don't know where he's going to play next season, but he's a Canuck for now. But this is sort of interesting. Friedman reporting that Lindholm and the Canucks are going to meet with the doctors here to sort of figure out how best to treat whatever it is exactly that's ailing him with 11 games to go before they're really going to need him at playoff time.
Yeah, again, you mentioned it, really good in the draw. And for as much as we talk about his points, like, Rick Tocchet's always talking about this guy's defensive ability, right? And we've seen the stats of since the trade that the Canucks have given up so few chances and right. How improved they've been defensively. Like, the numbers match the eye test there. With Lindholm, I find it interesting. Tonight was the first night he's had back-to-back points since mid-February when he scored the 2 goals in Detroit and the game before that picked up an assist in Chicago. But again, I think this is all part of a solid run of play, I think, for Lindholm lately. Like, I think we've started to see him kind of turn a corner. Again, Ilya Mikheyev, I think you can also put in that conversation. Look, a couple games ago, everybody's talking about how Ilya Mikheyev's finally moving his feet. Lindholm as well. Like, Lindholm's looked good as of late. And the fact that the points are coming is nice because it kind of exemplifies something that Rick Tocchet's always talking about, and that's that if you chase points, you're not going to get them, but if you play the right way and you do right by this game, the game will do right by you. And look, Nils Höglander was a great example of that tonight. He was getting in on the forecheck. He was a dog on a bone all over the ice, and of course, he leaves the night with 2 goals, but Elias Lindholm as well. Like, I thought Elias Lindholm's been good lately. You know, obviously there's no points in a few games, but now he's got points in back-to-back games. You're hoping this is something he can build off of, and of course, you're hoping that injury is nothing serious.
Yeah, certainly a storyline worth monitoring, and of course, we'll do that here on Rinkwide, Canucks Army, and Canucks Convo as well. Lindholm, just for what it's worth, saw Jonathan Huberdeau and Sharon Govich, along with Kuzmenko. That was the matchup. Those were his primary opponents on the night, so they didn't factor in the scoring. You would say that that's a job well done. And this is a night where the Canucks, with last change at home, should be able to take advantage of some matchups. And so if you wanted JT Miller out there against Nazem Kadri or Blake Coleman, you know, in theory, I mean, that should free up Elias Pettersson and his line. It should free up Lindholm and his line. And even the fourth line. Again, you're not expecting a ton of offense from them, but there were some moments, and we'll see how long Nils Amon stays in this lineup. Does PDG get back in there? The Ian Cole situation is interesting for one night of load management. I got it. 2 in a row, and maybe it's as simple as, you know, don't tinker with a winning lineup, but you wonder with a Los Angeles team coming in here on Monday, a divisional matchup, potential playoff opponent, do we see them stick with this same lineup, or does Rick Tocchet make some changes based on the opponent? How long can you sit Ian Cole before that becomes a little bit of a storyline? So Canucks were winners, but it's a market where we analyze everything. And so there are always going to be stories, win or lose for the Vancouver Canucks. We should mention 45th victory of the season. They're 45-18-8. So up to 98 points, Dave, now within 2 of the century mark for the Vancouver Canucks. 3 straight wins now, 7-1-1 in their last 9 hockey games. And this is 6 games into the 9-game homestand, And they are now 4-1-1 through the first six. So they have picked up 9 of a possible 12 points, 750 points percentage. Hard to argue with that. And the final week, we'll see visits from the Kings, the Dallas Stars, and then that Sunday afternoon game to wrap things up against the Anaheim Ducks. So they have positioned themselves pretty well here at 4-1-1 on the homestand. You know, if you run the table, you go 7-1-1. That's incredible. Even if there's a loss in there, if they win two of the final three, I think you call the homestand a success at this stage. Now, they've got to go out there and do it. More immediately is the fact that the Canucks win hours after the Edmonton Oilers lose. So I don't know how often Canuck fans cheer for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I got a sense on Saturday afternoon, the early game on Hockey Night in Canada, that Canuck fans were pulling for the Leafs, who did the Canucks a solid, but made it a little more difficult on themselves than perhaps they should have, much as the Canucks did. We talked about that. It was 5-0 Toronto at one point, and then it was 5-3 with about 4 minutes to go. But the Leafs seal the deal into an empty net. Austin Matthews scores there. So 6-3 Toronto over the Edmonton Oilers. And with that, the Vancouver Canucks extend their lead to 10 points once again. Yes, Edmonton's got 3 games in hand, but it's getting late for the Edmonton Oilers here. At some point, if the Canucks keep winning, it's going to force the Oilers to run the table. And you wonder if they'll be able to do that. Of course, there's still one head-to-head matchup to come between those teams in Edmonton. But boy, it would be nice for the Canucks' sake if they could render that game insignificant in terms of the battle for top spot in the Pacific Division. So if the Canucks can continue their winning ways, that game against the Oilers certainly be pride and bragging rights on the line. And the Oilers, after 3 losses to the Canucks earlier in the season, you know that they're not going to want to get swept by the Vancouver Canucks. They're a different team now. But yeah, the Canucks back in front of Edmonton by 10 full points with just 11 games to go. They got to figure out a way to lock down this Pacific Division with a 10-point lead and 11 games to play.
You've got to. You had such a strong start to the season. We know how insufferable all the Oilers fans would be if the Oilers somehow came back and squeaked through and took the Pacific Division crown. The Canucks got to see this through. They got to see this through. And someone pointed this out to me, Jeff. If the Canucks win the Pacific Division, this would be their first Pacific Division title, because it wasn't the Pacific Division the last time they finished at the top of their division.
Just to wrap up the other scores that affect the Vancouver Canucks, or possibly impact the Vancouver Canucks. Los Angeles Kings defeated Tampa 4-3 in overtime, so a win for the Kings, who pick up 2 points and creep a little bit closer to the Edmonton Oilers. There's a 3-point gap there. Edmonton at 88 points, the LA Kings at 85. Oilers have 2 games in hand on the Kings, and Vegas was a 4-2 winner at home against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So VGK trying to fend off the St. Louis Blues, who were winners earlier in the day. Vegas with a little bit of breathing room. They've got a 4-point cushion, but a big one, huge one, coming up on Monday. Vegas is at St. Louis. So no dull nights from here to the finish now. So many games with the playoff implications and ramifications. And that is a massive one right around the playoff bar, as St. Louis can creep back within 2 of Vegas with a win on home ice. But the win that we're talking about, the Vancouver Canucks do what they had to do to defeat the Calgary Flames, 4-2 the final. Hoglander with a pair, Miller on the power play is the game winner, and Elias Lindholm into the empty net. For the Flames, it was defenseman Rasmus Anderson and Joel Hanley, the goal scorers there. 4-2 is the final. Lots still ahead here on Rinkwide Vancouver.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Vancouver Canucks defeat the Calgary Flames by a score of 4-2. Jeff and Dave with you here on Rinkwide Vancouver. Going to get inside that locker room and the media conference room here in a moment. You'll hear from Rick Tocchet. You're going to hear from Nils Höglander. We don't hear from Hoagie very often. A man of few words, but he's letting his actions speak for themselves these days, up to 22 goals now. You'll hear from Connor Garland, too. An interesting comment from Garland, so we'll get to that in a sec here. But let's start with Rick Tocchet, who talked about with JT Miller as their leading scorer. I think the way Miller's been playing, that's generally been the top line for much of the season, but I don't think there was much doubt, and the coach left no doubt that there was a definite number one line in this hockey game, and that was Pettersson between Garland and Höglander.
Yeah, they were great. They were obviously our best line. I thought they were really good. Petey, moving his feet, Gar's doing his thing on the forecheck, Hoggy, that breakaway goal. He made more unreal moves. So, yeah, that line was feeling it tonight. I don't know when I played them, but they were out there a lot. It was easy to put them out there.
A lot of talk this week, Dave, about Elias Pettersson moving those feet. You heard the coach mention it there. And Garland in on the forecheck. And he liked all the moves from Höglander as well. How much did he play them? Elias Pettersson, under 20 minutes, 19 minutes and 33 seconds for Garland. His ice time at 16:10 and Höglander doesn't get a lot of special teams time, so 12 minutes and 47 seconds, but four shots on goal, three hits. That's a solid night at the office for a guy who's only seeing 12 and a half minutes of ice time. So great return on the investment of Nils Höglander, and I think there's probably a lot of people in that organization and around town that are glad the Canucks didn't part with him at the trade deadline.
Jeff, not to rain on the parade, and I know at the end of the day, it's a good problem to have. But I had the thought tonight of Connor Garland is so clearly part of what stirs the drink on that line and why that trio is working right now. So the question I asked myself tonight, Jeff, and the question I want to pose to you is, when Dakota Joshua gets back,
yes,
what the hell do you like? Ask me 4 weeks ago if I ever thought that splitting Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua would ever happen, and I would have called you crazy. But now I'm not so sure if you can split up this trio.
Yeah, look, and I had a Dakota Joshua sighting briefly in the Canucks locker room. It looked like he was going to walk through the room, and then he saw all the media, and he turned away. But I saw him in the back of the lounge this morning. He's alive. He's around. We haven't seen him at practice yet, but coming up on six full weeks for him, so it does feel like the Canucks are certainly showing an abundance of caution. I think the fact that they continue to win here probably eases the burden a little bit to want and wish him back in the lineup. And the same goes for Thatcher Demko. I mean, as long as Casey DeSmith is winning, the team's winning, it buys them a little bit of time, but they do want to get both of these guys back so that they have some run-up to the playoffs. But I'm with you. Like 2 weeks ago, I would have said, oh yeah, of course, you're going to have Garland and Joshua together and maybe you go with Lindholm there, a guy that has a little more upside offensively than Teddy Bluger, knowing that if there isn't that chemistry you're looking for, you can plug Bluger right back in there. First of all, we don't know when Joshua gets back, so it's a little premature. They play on Monday. I don't think he's going to play then. Then there's a few more days off before the Thursday game. Be great to see him before the end of the homestand, but whatever the case, as long as he's not in the lineup, then you're going to see Garland and Höglander together. I think they'll cross that bridge when they get to it, but it's a good problem to have for Rick Tocchet. And you're right. I mean, the idea, for the longest time, you figured, they're just going to reunite that third line that was the best third line in hockey for a long stretch. But now I think Tocchet's got this option that, maybe you can experiment a little bit with Dakota Joshua, that maybe you can try him on a line with Besser and Miller and see what he could bring there. Or, if this line that we're talking about sort of loses the magic that they've got, then maybe explore Joshua instead of one of those guys. I think at some point you're going to see Garland and Joshua back together. They play well together. They like playing together, but that's not an option right now. So it is sort of the mystery that will be revealed whenever it is that Dakota Joshua gets the clean bill of health and the green light to get back in the lineup. Let's hear from Nils Höglander. As we said, don't hear from him an awful lot. He's not a go-to guy in that locker room when it comes to media interviews, but you score two goals and a big win for the hockey club, you're going to be in demand. And so Nils Höglander, after the game, talking about the play of his line with Pettersson and Garland.
I think we played pretty good today, all game, so maybe backed up a little bit in the third there at the end, but pretty good game.
How are you feeling about your game personally right now?
Pretty good. I mean, we played pretty good today, so just keep going from this.
Yeah, things working pretty well for Nils Höglander. Give a guy an opportunity, and he's making the most of it. 22 goals, as has been well documented now, all of them at 5-on-5. It is pretty remarkable. A top 10 5-on-5 goal scorer in the National Hockey League right now.
And Jeff, just think of where this guy's been, right? Like this time last year, he's in Abbotsford. Start of this year, he's in Rick Tocchet's doghouse. The development that we've seen in him throughout the season, just the progression of his game, he's doing everything right. Like, he's really cleaning up all those areas. Like, we don't hear that from Rick Tocchet much anymore about Höglander being out of position and how he can't trust him defensively or anything like that. Rick Tocchet's the coach. He will go down as the coach. I know Nils Höglander, you know, he progressed in age, so that's obviously going to help. But Rick Tocchet's the coach that ultimately got through to Nils Höglander and ultimately has turned Nils Höglander into a bona fide top six winger at this point.
You know who really likes Nils Höglander? Connor Garland. Listen to this. This is Connor Garland with a really interesting observation. And, you know, I don't think you have to sort of peel away at the layers here. Connor Garland lays it pretty clear that he just thinks it took a little bit of structure. And my goodness, we've used that term enough this season and really since Rick Tocchet took over. But Connor Garland in awe of the way that Nils Höglander has progressed under Rick Tocchet's tutelage.
Well, he's always, you know, my first day here, I think my first interview, I couldn't believe how good he was, you know, 3 years ago. You know, I think he's just really found his game all around the ice. It's hard when you're younger and there's not really much structure in place and you kind of just, you know, trying to feel the game out. But now, you know, we're a very structured team, play a hard style of hockey. And I think, you know, it's just it's coming along for him. So he's going to continue to get better, though, each year. So he's going to be a good player in this league for a long, long time.
From day one, he's been a big fan of Hoagie. I mean, the same stature, same kind of game style. Get in, hound pucks, turn them over, win your board battles, all that kind of stuff. So I think there's some mutual respect between those two guys playing together. But that's a really interesting comment from Connor Garland that just felt like Höglander needed the structure that's finally arrived. And with it, we've watched him blossom this year.
No sugarcoating, no reading between the lines. Just lays it out there right for you, right, honestly. And he's absolutely correct. Like I just said it, Rick Tocchet is the coach that has gotten through to Nils Höglander. I don't think it's a coincidence that, Jeff, when you have bad defensive play, but nobody else is playing defense, or you don't really have any guidance of where you're supposed to go, then it's hard to understand what you're supposed to do. But for Höglander, like, everything seems like it's been laid out pretty clearly for him. And when you think the game as well as he does, you're going to be able to get it at both ends of the ice.
Go to the net. Good things happen. You hear that all the time. And certainly on that first goal, just some beautiful passing, and especially the way that Elias Pettersson's going, another multi-point night for him. And he's starting to pick up his game and pick up points. So that's a really good sign for the hockey club and certainly for that line. Of course, two ends of the ice. And we talked about the fact that, you know, there were some stretches here where the Canucks maybe didn't carry the play as much as you would like. But you got Casey DeSmith doing his thing. And really, Rick Tocchet likes the fact that, you know, another night here, didn't hold them to 17 shots on goal like they did with the Sabres and Montreal the other night, but another night where they keep an opponent under 25 shots on goal. The final shots were 26-24. Canucks outshot the Flames in the middle period. Otherwise, the shots were even at 8-8 in the third, 6-6 in the first period. But this is another night. And, you know, look at the scoring chances. According to Natural Stat Trick at the end of the night, the Calgary Flames, 9 high dangers. So, again, the Canucks are doing a pretty good job of keeping teams to the outside, giving up one but not giving up multiples. Yeah, sure, there were a couple of posts in there and some bounces went their way. But here was Rick Tocchet. Just a thought on the way his team is defending these days.
Yeah, I really like the way the Deer, you know, for the most part, we're controlling the middle of the ice. You know, we're giving them outside stuff. you know, I got to give D a lot of credit. You know, if we have some indecision, if we're going to go or not, we'll hold the middle. And that's probably the last part. The last good thing I like is, you know, we're not diving. I think 3 weeks ago when we were making a few mistakes, we, you know, one guy makes a second guy. Now the one guy makes a mistake and we're kind of holding the fort. That's good to see going this late in the year where we're starting to do that.
That's where talking about team defense and a common theme has been this idea that, look, it is a game of mistakes. Mistakes are going to happen. You don't play perfect hockey, even holding opponents to 17 shots the other night. There were still some breakdowns there. There were breakdowns in this hockey game. But it's when you compound the mistakes at this level. You can get away with one mistake if somebody is there to clean up your mess, and the Canucks are doing a pretty good job of that. It's when one mistake leads to another and missed assignments, blown coverage, and, you know, those backdoor plays, tap-ins, and those types of things that we're just not seeing very often from the Vancouver Canucks. So it's too bad that they gave up the goal in the final minute. You know, that goes on Casey DeSmith's record and will hurt his individual stats a little bit. But as we talked about in the first segment, you know, another solid night where he made the saves that he was supposed to. And ultimately for this team, you know, giving up two, even against a relatively low scoring team like the Calgary Flames, you know, another solid night defensively for the Vancouver Canucks.
Protecting the guts of the ice. And that's the thing that I keep coming back to, Jeff, is when they had the two-game skid and we're all trying to analyze what's going on, and all I could focus on is the power play, that's ultimately why. Is it just feels like it's been laid out so clearly for these guys what it's going to take for them to win hockey games. And look, I think it's easy to kind of fall into that, okay, well, we know we're going to make the playoffs and we know how to play and we know how to win hockey games. And I'm not saying the Canucks felt that necessarily or got a little too cocky or anything like that. I'm just saying that an 82-game season is very long, and there are going to be nights where you're not super sharp on those details, but the Canucks have quickly gotten things back on the rails, and yeah, the team defense protecting the guts of the ice, you see it, and again, compounding mistakes it can't happen at this level, and when it does, the puck usually ends up in the back of your net, and look, every time the Canucks have success, they follow a recipe. Like, every Canucks win is almost the same game, right? It's the Canucks control territorially, they defend well, they obviously don't compound mistakes, and then they get a goal when they need it. Like, that's how every Canucks game has gone this season, it feels like, when they win.
Well, they won this one 4-2. We will shift into our rink-wide Vancouver three-star selection, and I think this will be the second or third game in a row where we mirror the selection of the broadcast crew in the rink. And Hockey Night in Canada, they went with a clean sweep of that Canucks top line, and why not? Those guys set the tone. They came through. Makes it pretty easy to select Hoglander as the first star of the hockey game, no question there. Pettersson is the second star. And again, I don't think Connor Garland's contributions should be dismissed. He's in on the two goals, their second assist, but sometimes second assists can weigh a little bit more than others, and I thought that was the way that this game went. So Hoglander, Pettersson, Garland, clean sweep for the top line, clean sweep for the Vancouver Canucks. I would say honorable mention to Rasmus Anderson. I thought he was noticeable for the Flames, scored, he hit a post, plays a lot because they don't have a ton of experience on the back end there. So if I had to pick a Flame, not that I had to, because this is rink-wide Vancouver, and you know, we make our own rules here, but I would throw a bone at least to Rasmus Anderson as an honorable mention on this night.
Oh, absolutely. And just on Connor Garland, I just want to quickly touch on him a little bit, because since he's been a Canuck, Jeff, the knock, and maybe not the knock, maybe the knock is not the right word, but an observation about Garland is that for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to mesh with Elias Pettersson. And let's not pretend like the Canucks haven't tried to force that square into a round hole for a long time, right? Like this isn't the first time we've seen Connor Garland playing with Elias Pettersson, but every time it's happened in the past, it hasn't stuck for whatever reason. It just hasn't been a good enough fit that the coaching staff feels like they can stick with it. But right now, it seems like we're seeing a level of chemistry that we haven't had. I know earlier in the season, Connor Garland opened the season on Elias Pettersson's wing, and obviously Elias Pettersson had that little alley-oop pass in game one against Edmonton that made you think, okay, maybe they're going to have this chemistry, but now that we've seen it for a few games, I wonder how much longer it can last. And I wonder if ultimately, just with what Connor Garland's been able to do this year, if this is the time that it sticks, if this is the time that Connor Garland can finally stay on Elias Pettersson's wing, because I'll tell you what, Jeff, like, that's going to keep Connor Garland in the Canucks top six that's going to keep Connor Garland on the Canucks top line is if he can mesh with Elias Pettersson. Look, for all the carousel of wingers that Elias Pettersson has had this year, I'm sure he's hoping that Connor Garland can stay on his wing at this point.
Well, again, we'll see what happens if Rick Tocchet has the options, if everybody's healthy when Dakota Joshua gets back. And that's the other thing. You focus on Joshua getting healthy and getting back there, but it's contact sport, and there's nothing to say that somebody else may be out of the lineup. We'll knock on wood for the Vancouver Canucks that everybody stays healthy now with 11 to go before the playoffs. 4-2, the Canucks defeat the Flames. We're going to get to listener feedback, staff that stands out, and a preview of what's to come in the final week of this 9-game homestand, Canucks over the Flames. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Four-two, Canucks over the Flames. Going to get to our stat that stands out and some listener feedback here momentarily. Jeff and Dave with you on this episode of Rinkwide Vancouver. A reminder to join us and the rest of the Canucks Army crew Saturday, April 20th. Mark that date down. Saturday, April 20th, Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano. Special tribute for our late friend Jason Botchford. It's all presented by Fountain Tire. It's being called Bro Do Your Playoffs. It's a media event celebrating the life and legacy of Jason. It's going to feature shared memories, special guests, an exclusive musical performance from the matinee, and the celebration of Vancouver's triumphant return to the playoffs, plus the event's a fundraiser in support of the BC Mental Health Foundation. Tickets are only $10, so join us on April 20th for a memorable experience where every ticket purchased contributes to making a positive impact on the community. Get your tickets at nationgear.ca. Looking forward to that already, just as I'm looking forward to getting into our feedback channels at Rinkwide Van and seeing what the people had to say about this 4-2 win over the Flames. We always do a stat that stands out. Dave, you've done enough of these now to know that this portion of the podcast, come up with something out of this hockey game that jumps out numerically or statistically. And I think for me, it's the two goals from Nils Höglander, 22 now on the season. There are 11 games remaining. If he continues to play on this line, and I don't see how that changes Monday, certainly, but I don't see how that changes as long as they keep producing, 11 games to go. Like, you got to think that he's going to take a legitimate run at a 25-goal season.
I thought you were going to say 30. I thought you were going with a total quads not answer going there. I was going to say that. Wow, Jeff. Okay. But no, 25, yeah, he's going to take a run at it. I think that's a good way to put it is, like, they're not facing the best opponents, right? Like, they're still at home for a lot of games. They've got a little road trip that they're going on. And They've got a game against the Anaheim Ducks still, right? Yep. So, like, there's your chance. Like, the Anaheim Ducks have been eliminated from the playoffs. They're going to have stuff to play for, sure. But, you know, Nils Höglander is going to be taking a run at 25. And hey, I'll throw it out there. He's going to be taking a run at 30. I think he gets 25. I don't know if he gets 30. I don't know if he
even
gets close
to 30. Like, I'm down to see him take a real run at 30. I just think running out of daylight. But, and again, if, you know, like Brock Besser, I want to think that he can get to 40. And I certainly think he can, but he needs four over the final 11. You know, a couple power play goals would certainly help his cause. And he's gone a little bit quiet in the goal scoring department, but he put the puck on a tee for JT Miller for the power play goal. So he gets a point and he contributed, certainly. But, you know, look, 30 was the number. He got there. He's at 36 now. But I do hope that Brock Besser, you know, throw in an empty netter somewhere along the line, get to 40. I think that would be an incredible accomplishment for Brock Besser. We all wondered, can he get to 30? Can he get to 40 now is the question I think that's fair to ask with 11 games remaining. Another question that's fair to ask is, what did the listeners think of this one, a 4-2 win over the Flames? Let's get to our feedback channels at Rinkwide Van. Hussein says, glad to see Connor Garland get rewarded with production recently. Love the motor and tenacity he plays with every night. I think he has a strong case to stay in the top six, even when Dakota Joshua returns. So we talked a little bit about that, and we'll see how that all plays out. Kay says, the Garland, Höglander, Pettersson line is electric. There were so many little moments where they just looked so good on the ice, and it paid off on those goals. We didn't even talk about Dave. Like, you know, we were on hat-trick watch for Zadorov the other night. He got his two in the first period and then had a chance racing down the left wing. Höglander had that play behind the net in the second period where he and Garland were buzzing and no Flame came to him. And so he just kept cruising out from behind the net and widened his angle. And he had a pretty good chance, I think. And Markstrom made the stop there, but you know, he wasn't content at two. He wanted more. And I thought he had a pretty good look to make it a 3-goal night.
Oh, and hey, if he's going to get 30, he's going to need a couple. He's going to need couple of those, Jeff.
No, you're right.
Look, when you're hot, you're hot. And right now, like, that's the thing. In all seriousness, obviously, we're joking a little bit when we talk about 30, but for Nils Höglander getting hot at the right time, I know he's been rather consistent this year, but right now, he's playing some of the best hockey we've ever seen him play in a Canucks uniform. Like full stop. This is the best I think we've seen from Nils Höglander. He looks so confident right now. Again, you brought it up earlier in the show, and I feel like we kind of need to circle back on it. Obviously, JT Miller, 90 points tonight. He's, you know, can he get to 100? There's a lot of conversations, but the power play, Pia Suter is the left shot option right now in the middle, and they need that left shot option, it feels like. It doesn't feel like Elias Lindholm's going to be able to go there, because when you have the left shot in that spot, it opens up a world of possibilities for JT Miller, and I think that's been a big reason why the Canucks power play has kind of turned a corner in this last week here. Nils Höglander is the only other option. Think of who the left shots are on the team. Like, you're not putting Ilya Mikheyev out there. There's no other option, really. Like, it has to be Nils Höglander, and I think the Canucks are kidding themselves if they don't do it soon, because he's getting hot at the right time. He's getting hot at the right time, and yeah, like, it's funny. Every time we say Nils Höglander has this many goals, we're saying, yeah, he has this many 5-on-5 goals, because all of his goals keep coming at 5-on-5. The guy needs some power play time, and I think getting him on power play one is the next move. If this power play kind of slows up a little bit when they hit their next little speed bump, I think that's the move. Don't try to change your formation. Keep JT Miller on the half wall. See what you can do and put Nils Höglander on power play one.
I'd be down for that. Again, like, Pia Suter's been a nice addition. He fills roles for this team, but as a bumper guy, I miss Bo Horvat, but Bo doesn't play here anymore. So they've got to find somebody in that bumper spot. And I'm not sure that Suter he's reliable. He's safe, but on the power play, I'm looking for somebody that's dangerous that can, hit the home run. I don't need singles on the power play. I need somebody to knock it out of the park. Paul says playing the puck outside the trapezoid is apparently okay now. I thought Jacob Markstrom strayed pretty far from his net. Like, I was surprised that there wasn't a penalty there in a game where, you know, the Canucks had to wait till the late middle stages of the third period to get a power play. I was a little surprised that Markstrom didn't get called. Paul also says need a new definition of penalty shots. We covered that earlier in the pod, but there's another one for you wondering what exactly is going on there. Hassan says, you know, and there's been so much talk about Garland and Höglander and their performances, but Hassan's got an interesting point here. He says those two guys have gotten the best out of Petey, and it wasn't that long ago people were wondering what's going on. Like, you got to pick it up. Like, maybe it is the fact that the wingers have jump-started the star center as much as the star center, who, you know, is making his plays and doing his dekes and those types of things. But I do think there's a little bit of a two-way street going on here.
Well, absolutely, Jeff. And I pointed this out earlier in the show. Like, I know he's a star player. Like, I know this person's a star player. But let's not forget what he is at his core. He's a playmaker. Like, Elias Pettersson makes plays. And he needs people to make plays too. And I think that's been evident all season long that he just hasn't had those guys with him this season. And I mean, I pointed this out earlier, the game when Podkolzin was on his wing, there was an instance where Podkolzin was kind of late reading the play and getting to the front of the net. And I think Pettersson, again, I'm not saying he was trying to show anyone up, but I noticed it. He threw it right to the net where Podkolzin should have been. And the puck just went into the corner instead. And to me, I picked that up as quite a clear message when I watched it that, yeah, my winger should have been there. My winger, if he was reading the play as quickly as he should be there, and that should be a backdoor tap in. But Podkolzin was late to the play, and look, you love Podkolzin's motor, but, you know, he doesn't think the game. He doesn't think the game at that high level speed that you're seeing now from Connor Garland and Nils Höglander. And again, like I said, Connor Garland hitting on that line is so crucial, because we've seen a heavy dose of Höglander and Pettersson together, but it really feels like they need that third cog to kind of make it all go. And I think that's what Connor Garland's giving them right now.
Couple more contributions here I want to get to. West Coast Life says Casey the starter, giving Corey Schneider vibes. He picks up his 11th win of the season. So DeSmith now 11-5-6 on the season, points in 17 of his 24 appearances. Again, getting the job done. You know, he'll face tougher nights ahead, probably better teams. Dallas coming in. One of the highest scoring teams in the National Hockey League. That's on Thursday, but you can only play the team in front of you. This one, it was Calgary, and Casey DeSmith did what he had to do to help the Canucks win. And then we'll leave the last word here to Jack, who says they're winning the games they should be winning. Good team effort. And I would agree. I mean, yes, they lost to Colorado, and it was disappointing when you had a 3-0 lead, but that is the Colorado Avalanche, and star players took over that night. Again, not to excuse the Vancouver Canucks. The Washington one, they needed some offense, obviously. They didn't get it. But since then, beat Buffalo, beat Montreal, now beat Calgary. These were games on the schedule that you looked at and thought, part of this 9-game homestand, those are points for the taking. And as we mentioned, the Canucks have taken 9 of the 12 points on the table in the homestand. And again, I think if they can go 2 for 3 even, like, I'm giving them a loss here. I don't know where it's going to happen, but if they lose one of these final three, I still think this can be a remarkably successful homestand at this stage of the season, as they're trying to amass as many points as possible to hold off the Edmonton Oilers.
That's what we're all hoping for. I said it earlier. I've been talking to the Oilers fans, our friends over at Oilers Nation. I've been talking to them. They know they're already planning how they're going to be the most insufferable people possible if the Oilers come back and win the division. That can happen.
So let's just dovetail this all together then as we wrap things up here. I do wonder if the Edmonton Oilers ought to be looking over their shoulder a little bit at the LA Kings, who are in here on Monday. A 6 o'clock start. By the way, we should mention it's an earlier than normal start, which means an earlier than normal posting of Rinkwide Vancouver. So everybody benefits. We'll start whenever the final buzzer sounds. But the Kings up to 85 points are just 3 back of the Oilers. So Edmonton's got 2 games in hand, but they're like, as much as the Oilers would love to reel in the Vancouver Canucks and finish first in the Pacific, they certainly want home ice advantage in the first round, whoever their opponent is. And I mean, the Kings are looking and thinking, the Oilers should probably be hearing some footsteps. So it's a big game. They're all big games for teams for various reasons. Everybody's got something to play for right now. But you're going to see a motivated Oilers or motivated Kings team on Monday. We saw what they did to the Canucks the last time they were at Rogers Arena, hung a 5 spot on them, and one of the poorer performances we've seen from the Canucks in a long time, and really most of the season. The Canucks answered in a low-scoring, low-event game that required overtime at Crypto.com a couple of weeks later, or a week later. So no easy task. I mean, the LA Kings, they're a tough team to break down. The Canucks have seen that now twice, even though they got the win, the 2-1 victory in overtime. But this isn't going to be easy, and neither will Dallas on Thursday. The homestand wraps up with a visit from Anaheim, and that'll be back-to-back for the Ducks, who are in Edmonton the day before. So when we talk about points that are there for the taking, you would think that the Canucks should be able to take 2 points off the Anaheim Ducks. But these first 2 games of this week, Los Angeles and Dallas, certainly are going to present some challenges for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and I find it so interesting that you bring up the fact that the Kings are just 3 points behind the Oilers, because if we're talking about that, then we also have to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights, who are at 83, right?
Yep.
That's close. That's close. So as much as we're talking about, yeah, the Oilers want home ice advantage, and that's absolutely true. There's a world, Jeff, statistically, by the math, there is a world where the Oilers fall into the second wild card spot. Like if LA catching them is a real probability, then so is the Oilers falling into the second wild card spot, which would mean that, in all likelihood, that they play the Vancouver Canucks in the first round of the playoffs, because the Nashville Predators don't show any signs of stopping.
Oh my goodness.
They're at the same number of points as the Oilers right now with 88. And like I said, they're showing no signs of stopping. They pull out the 1-0 victory over the Detroit Red Wings today. They're getting it done no matter what kind of game they're being required to play right now.
Yeah, back-to-back shutouts for Nashville, 17 straight with a point, 15-0-2. It's been an incredible run. I think you have to put Andrew Brunette in the coach of the year conversation. Again, I think Rick Tocchet is the front runner. Obviously, Chris Knobloch and the job that he's done turning the Edmonton Oilers around. I wonder if all 3 of the finalists are going to come out of the West. We'll see how that all shakes down, getting closer to award season, and the voting will be done here before too long. But Rick Tocchet's going to be there at the end without a doubt. But I do wonder if Andrew Brunette, I mean, this is one of the great late season charges we have ever seen in the National Hockey League. And showing no signs of slowing down, so we'll see where that tops out for the Nashville Predators. But the Canucks are done with the Preds. They don't have to worry about that. I say done with the Preds. In the regular season, a distinct possibility they could face them in the playoffs. Playoffs are getting closer. Just 11 games remaining for the Vancouver Canucks. 4-2 winners over the Calgary Flames. Practice day on Sunday. And then they'll take on those Los Angeles Kings. The third of four meetings. They still have one more game to go down in Southern California a little later on here this season. But Monday night, Rogers Arena. The Canucks and the Kings. A 6 o'clock faceoff. For David Quadrelli, this is Jeff Patterson saying thanks so much for listening to another edition of Rink Wide Vancouver.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.